Now on to our bloggers roundtable. It is time for more Obama-rama, including the fist bump scene around the world, plus Spike Lee and Clint Eastwood battle over Iwo Jima. With us today, Valencia Rohner. She runs the blog Diary of a Content Black Woman. She also hosts the internet show The Content Black Woman Show on Blog Talk Radio. LN Rock, otherwise known as the African-American Political Pundit. He's a member of the Afrosphere Bloggers Group, plus Jay Anderson of the blog Average Bro. Hi, folks.
Hi there. Stop.
Hi.
So we've all seen it, the Barack Obama fist pound. More importantly, we've seen the wave of media analysis dissecting the meaning. So, Valencia, you know, why don't you explain a pound, a fist pound? Because you know what? This is radio. For folks, the three people who haven't seen it, what are we talking about?
Well, as most who have been paying attention to the election closely know, on the evening that Barack Obama secured the nomination for the Democratic Party, he and his wife did what was called what the media is referring to as a fist pound. But those of us who are not urbanly challenged call it giving dap. So as a result, people are easy to, as we say, be mystified, or some people even criticize what they don't understand. So there's like this cultural nuance, and sometimes I feel like we're like in a lab and people are observing, ooh, what does it mean? What does it mean? So just
catching up on their blackness.
They're catching up. I didn't want to say that, but yeah, okay. Or being cool, if we want to be more politically correct these days.
All right. Well, Fox News's E.D. Hill questioned if the bump was a terrorist fist jab. Take a listen.
A fist bump, a pound, a terrorist fist jab. The gesture everyone seems to interpret differently.
Terrorist fist jab. Okay. Where did that come from? You know, Jay.
I have no idea what the heck she was talking about. A terrorist fist jab? I think what this whole episode just shows is, you know, as the Obama campaign continues to grow, and now as he's getting himself closer to the White House, you know, a lot of these cultural curiosities, things that are very common to black people, but maybe not so much to the mainstream media, they're going to start kind of surfacing, and you're going to see this sort of dissection. I mean, honestly, when I saw him do it, I thought it was pretty cool. I mean, I didn't think too much of it. I may have hit the TiVo rewind button a couple of times, but otherwise, I thought it was just a pretty cool gesture. I actually liked the fact that he tapped his wife on the butt a couple of times after.
Oh.
I happen to do that with my wife all the time, but I'm just saying, I think just overall, it just shows, again, maybe the lack of understanding of just basic cultural things, and it's just the beginning. I mean, wait till he busts out the electric slide at the inaugural ball, or, you know, God forbid he decides to grow a goatee. I mean, it's going to be over. You're going to see so much written about things that are just common. You know, it was a little puzzling.
All right. Well, Ellen, to go back to Fox News for a second, Hill apologized for the comment. Fox confirms that her show was canceled shortly after her comment, but a representative didn't say whether the comment caused the cancellation. So in this case, what do you think the motivation was for that comment? And also, you know, is it good enough to have this cancellation and apology?
Cancellation and apology for someone saying that terrorist, I'm not sure. Slap me five on the black hand side, up high, down low. These folks are too slow. I mean, it's part of the cultural dynamic of America. It's part of jazz. It's part of R&B. It's part of everything that has happened in urban America over many years. And they just don't get it, unfortunately. But there are some people that get it. Larry Bird got it. Many presidents have gotten it. They have slapped each other five. The, the traditional black power handshake is used to so much now that it's no longer a black thing. In fact, it's an urban thing. In fact, it's a cultural thing of America. I don't get it. I can't begin to think about what she was thinking in her mind when she said it, but I'm glad she's gone.
All right. I want to move on to another topic, and this one is going to take me a little while to explain. So Spike Lee took Clint Eastwood to task in a UK paper, The Guardian, because there aren't any black characters in his films about World War II, Letters from Iwo Jima, and Flags of Our Fathers. Eastwood then said that Spike Lee should, quote, shut his face. Eastwood said there weren't any African Americans involved with the flag raised at Iwo Jima. It produced this very classic image of World War II. Then Spike said about the Eastwood quote, sounds like an angry old man right there. Now, ABC News reports that Lee also said, quote, if he wishes I could assemble African-American men who fought at Iwo Jima, I'd like him to tell these guys that what they did was insignificant and they did not exist. Now, Valencia, both of these directors are brand names. Who won the fight, if anybody?
Well, you know, I think in context, I wonder if I would say Clint Eastwood, if you understand Clint Eastwood's role in the African-American community when it comes to entertainment. He has been well acknowledged by the likes of the Urban League and the NAACP. I mean, he is known for his commitment to diversity in his films along the likes of a Forrest Whitaker and a Morgan Freeman. So I wonder if it seems like Spike overstepped it on this one.
Now, Jay, our research shows there were black soldiers at Iwo Jima, but none of them helped raise the flag. Is this just a case where, look, you know, he's casting the most important people in the story, and he doesn't need the black folks who were kind of secondary in this one case?
I sort of agree with Clint Eastwood. I mean, reality is, yes, there were many black soldiers who served at Iwo Jima. There were over 1,000, and there were a handful of those that even got a Silver Star. So, you know, historically, Spike Lee is correct. There were black people who were involved there. But, you know, Clint Eastwood's movies were his portrayal or his depiction of what it is that happened there. And reality is, when you're making a movie, you can put whatever the heck you want out there. That's not revisionist history. That's just the story that he happened to draw. Now, on the other hand, I got to question Spike Lee for bringing this up now. I mean, reality is, I don't know if you caught this, but he has a movie that just happens to be coming out in the fall that's war themed. And I'm just maybe wondering if maybe Spike's overstepping his boundaries there. Because reality is, he doesn't want to go movie for movie and credential for credential with Clint Eastwood. I mean, Clint Eastwood, Million Dollar Baby, Mystic River, the two movies you just mentioned. Spike Lee has not really had a good movie since Malcolm X. I mean, come on. You know, Get on the Bus, Girl Six, Clockers. Clockers. Come on, guys. Clockers.
All right. What about the heist caper? I'm forgetting the name, with Clive Owen.
That was actually pretty good. Inside Man. That was a Denzel Washington movie. I'm not going to take that one away from him. But just overall, I'm just saying, maybe Spike has an ulterior motive of maybe, you know, lifting his profile because he's got a movie coming out in the fall. And reality is, Clint Eastwood's two movies were out in 2006. So you got to maybe question
right.
The timing there.
Ellen, you know, his movie is called Miracle at St. Anna. And do you think that it's below the belt? I mean, he's always been, Spike Lee has never been shy about publicity. Is it below the belt, even if this was publicity, to go ahead and do it?
I'm not sure. I'm kind of like 50% in support of what he said, but 50% understanding what our two other guests had mentioned, that, you know, history is history and it's not revisionist. The fact of the matter is that for the flag situation, there were no blacks. And it's like, hey, listen, it was what it was. But I think more blacks need to be included in films, particularly when blacks existed during the particular moment in time.
Jay, I'm going to go to another political topic. You wrote a post on your blog about rappers who were kind of slow to show their support for Obama. What are you talking about?
Yeah, just overall, I think I noticed a theme over the first 6 months or so of this year, particularly, you know, as Obama started picking up traction, that a lot of mainstream media publications all of a sudden started asking rappers for their opinions on the Obama candidacy. And you got some pretty ludicrous sound bites here, you know, with DMX and in some cases with Nas and Snoop Dogg and some of these other
DMX
guys.
DMX basically was like, is there an election going on?
Exactly. I mean, a lot of these guys, their sound bites were just, I mean, ludicrous in terms of what some of these guys were saying. But now all of a sudden that Obama just secured the nomination and he's pushing himself forward, you know, towards November, all of a sudden all these rappers are coming out of the woodwork and saying, we love Obama, we endorse Obama.
Give me an example.
50 Cent, a guy who said a few months ago that, you know, he's worried that Obama would get killed. He wouldn't vote for him. Not that he could vote anyway, because he's, you know, has some issues with that. But, you know, now 50 Cent is pro-Obama and pumping his fist and just things like that. I mean, I look at it two ways. It's good to see the hip-hop generation and particularly black men coming out and being in support, not necessarily of just Barack Obama, but the democratic process. The problem I have is, you know, when those messages that you're putting out there don't necessarily jive with the rest of this sort of music that you make. And then there's the whole opportunism thing with, you know, you got P. Diddy selling $75 vote or die T-shirts, but he didn't even register to vote in 2004, you know? So, I mean, I don't know. It's a good thing that they're trying to engage a newer generation of voters, but I question maybe the motive there.
Valencia, do you think, you know, there are a lot of grassroots hip-hop activists, you know, people who are real community organizers, but do you think that the celebrities have really made good on some of their promises?
No, not really. I kind of agree what you just said a moment ago. It's all suspect. I mean, and come on, there's some endorsements, I'm sure, Obama's campaign would not say this, that they may not want. So, you know, it's all relative.
Nobody wants the young Jeezy endorsement.
Or wants
to be associated with
Let me give you a prime example. Since we're on the subject of hip-hop, you know, the hip-hop mayor of Detroit endorsed Obama.
Ooh.
And Kwame Kilpatrick and Obama's campaign did a statement about the other Democratic elected officials from Michigan who endorsed him, but they did not comment on Kwame Kilpatrick's endorsement. So to keep in line with that whole theme, you know, if they motivate other qualified, eligible young people to vote, okay, so be it. But in terms of I need their endorsement because it's going to take me over the top, you know, I'm sure Obama's campaign folks are not losing any sleep, whether Diddy endorsed him or not.
Ellen, do you think that in general pop culture really is a meaningful motivator for young people to go vote?
I'm not sure on that. I think they're right that for Barack Obama, as an example, to have some of those rappers come out even early on in supporting him probably was, you know, not good anyway. So bottom line is with regards to the rappers, I would say just leave it alone. If they come on, good. If they don't come on, I understand. We can get them in other ways.
All right. Valencia, what do you think? Pop culture motivator, question mark?
I think pop culture is a motivator. I mean, the bottom line is, as it's been discussed earlier, the whole situation as it relates to how the cultural nuances influence this whole election season is just off the charts right now. So there are no predictables. There's a whole new set of rules being written for the 21st century, quite frankly. And I think that's just another example of it.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Jay Anderson of the blog Average Bro, LN Rock, otherwise known as the African American Political Pundit. Both were at our headquarters in Washington, D.C. Also, Valencia Rohner of the blog Diary of a Content Black Woman. She was with me at our NPR West studios. You can find links to their blogs and ours at nprnewsandnotes.org. And the conversation doesn't stop here. Our online series, Speak Your Mind, gives you a chance to sound off on the issues you care about. To find out how, go to our blog, nprnewsandnotes.org. And views.org and click on Speak Your Mind.